Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast, the show that brings together Michigan's top cannabis growers, advocates, and business owners to offer a fresh and honest perspective of Michigan's cannabis industry. Stick with us to get the lowdown from the people who have been on the ground floor of cannabis business in Michigan and gain insights into where the industry may be heading.
Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Ryan Basor. And today I am excited to have Chris Silva, my buddy, retail manager over at Farmhouse Wellness and a lot of other things over the years on the show today. Chris, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, man. I really, really appreciate it. It's a great honor to be on the show.
Thanks. I know you've been listening diligently every Friday. So it's going to be a good thing here. And we've got all three of my co-hosts again. We're on a roll here. Tom Beller up in Kalkaska. And I would also like to say we're actually live streaming for the first time. So, we'll see how that goes. But Tom, what's happening in Kalkaska?
Oh, it's a beautiful day up here. How you doing, Ryan?
Thanks. I'm doing very well. Thank you. Sam, also in Kalkaska. Got a nice space there. What's happening?
Oh, not too much, man. Finally being able to chip away at the to-do list here, but happy to be on the show again. Good to see you, man.
You too. And Kevin, coming live from his grow there in Lansing. What's happening, Kevin?
Not much, man. It's just good to see everybody and be able to be on the show today, man.
Yes. All right. So I first met Chris in 2015. I was fresh out of prison, still in the halfway house, and I was... I was downtown Lansing working on the MI Legalize campaign, helping out. And Chris had just had a victory as the campaign manager on the Wolf campaign, a ballot initiative, and was hired to do MI Legalize. So we spent a lot of time, me, him, and Nick Sattel up in Jeff Hank's office overlooking the Capitol, working on legalization. It was a good time. We had a fun time with it. And eventually, of course, that worked out. I made an introduction for Chris. After that, he wanted to get the industry, kind of give up the old signature driving and ballot stuff and politics and get into cannabis. And Chris ended up working at Kind Provisioning, one of our favorite stores of all time, right on Michigan Avenue, Lansing, and our friends there. And cut his teeth there. We worked together on some property deals, have done a lot of consulting. And now when I need to know what's going on with brands in the state or wherever and what's hot, what's not, I talk to Chris. And that's kind of his background. He's got a lot of knowledge in cannabis. I want him to talk to him about himself, but also Farmhouse Wellness, store in Grand Rapids, and how they came about and why I think it's a cool story. And how they're going to compete against the big guys. So, Chris, take it away.
Great, thanks, man. That was a very nice introduction. So definitely moving away from the kind of like the caregiver era and stuff in Lansing. I started finding myself, like you said, doing a lot of like the consulting, real estate stuff. As we all know, like that is in itself like its own little mini industry within our industry. So I was kind of doing a lot of stuff like that and looking for the right place to kind of land to do some stuff long term in the industry. And that's how I got linked up with Casey, the owner of Farmhouse Wellness. And we are, to my knowledge, like the only local who got one of these in Grand Rapids. We're the only group that's not like just highly capitalized. Like I was telling Ryan when I saw him the other day, Casey literally sold his family farm the other day to put into the AU inventory and the kind of the future expansions of the organization, so like literally out here selling the farm, and so I think that it's a pretty unique story. The fact that we were even able to wrestle one of these spots away in Grand Rapids, which was a pretty competitive licensure system, you had highly capitalized groups that were coming in and they were picking up five or six of these locations. And I think there's only going to be 21 whenever everything is all kind of said and done and it works its way out. So just even being able to be in the industry at all, to have like a licensed storefront was a a really big pull for us, and just to be a part of it has been a blast. You know, it's been a lot of fun. It's definitely been kind of surreal selling some of the, like, for example, you know, we used to carry quite a bit of Tom's caregiver stuff at Kind, you know, just to be able to, like, you know, make that transition and to bring stuff like that into the legal market and do that. Like, it's been a blast, you know?
Yeah, no, it's that's one of the things we're going to talk about a little later is the legacy brands. I like that term, legacy. It's kind of catching on, you know, that are hitting the market. I know you carried Highway 710, our buddy Jake Linder's brand, and some others that are, and, you know, giving you an edge as far as competing against these big companies with these huge buying power. But I wanted just to kick off a question because it's super fresh and it kind of happened. Like, there was a supply chain, an issue in sales. It was a perfect storm last week. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners felt it that are, you know, in the industry. And we had the October 1st deadline with caregivers that were, you know, as far as the medibles and the other concentrates. And I know a lot of companies, like stores like yourself, stocked up big time going into that and spent a lot of budget on it. And then also we had Croptober. Dispensary sales are down all across the state, which is always predictable. But we had a good season for growing, and more people are growing than ever in Michigan outdoors. So it kind of really affected the sales. And then there was that MRA audit that ends here in a couple of days that have got a lot of stores kind of just like, hold on for a week, hold on for 2 weeks. So, Chris, what's your take on that? What are you seeing? Have prices gone down at all because of that? And how has it affected your guys' buying? And then wouldn't mind hearing what maybe Sam's seen on the concentrate, or Tom as well, and Kevin. So,
sure. So I think the biggest thing is that basically there's two avenues of product, right? There's product that can only ever be med, and that stuff we're seeing like a decrease in that because it's all the last of the caregiver stuff. So these guys all loaded up on it. But once it's gone, you know? So like and you can only do one thing with it, which is sell it on the med side, which we're only med. So that's, you know, whatever, that's awesome for us, but it won't be like that forever. We're going to be AU in December. Okay. And so then on the flip side of that, you have, you know, products that could be converted to AU, and we're seeing the pricing on that, you know, kind of continuing to inch up, you know, like there's definitely, I think because of just the natural things going on in the market outside of our regulated stuff that, there's probably the demand to purchase isn't quite there. So that might bring prices down like temporarily, but, you know, anecdotally, anytime a store opens in Grand Rapids, you know, we feel it, you know? And so I know that like they're talking about, I think the AU sales on Detroit, every time a major municipality even starts to open up a little bit, I feel like that's going to drive a lot of the prices up. It's going to drive a lot of the availability down. So, I mean, like we're seeing things on a wholesale side shift from like, you know, we sell a lot of THC gummies, as the customers call them, and vape carts, you know, and the wholesale pricing on that is it's already on some brands. It's coming to a point where if you're doing this on like a true double up, which surprise, surprise, that's what people are trying to do. So that's the name of the game here. If you're doing that on a true double up, we're looking at like $65 1 gram carts of botanical derived terpene vape carts. I mean, it's insane. And the customer has been, the patient has been accustomed to a certain, like a Platinum Vape or some of these other companies, like their price range is $35 to $45, and it's pretty standard everywhere. So once we start talking about a $60 or a $65 gram, you know, I think that's really going to be a hard wake up call to the consumer. I'm not really sure like what the high point is that we're going to. So right now it's just we're waiting to see that fall out, because there's definitely been a couple round of purchases that people have made at that higher distillate price, but it's not really reflecting in the market yet. And I just think that's because of just an increase in competition. A lot of, like in our competition at least, are very highly capitalized groups. I suspect that they're not making money anyways, and that's kind of just like, that's like a cash burn is their strategy, you know? So for them, like, you know, making $3 on a platinum vape or a claw, like, that makes sense. But like that doesn't make sense over here, you know? So I think like, yeah, man, it's definitely getting wild, and we'll see what happens whenever the first price increases happen to the customer. And I feel like we've got to be pretty close to that happening.
I think we are.
Yeah, Chris, you mentioned something about the true double up when it comes to reselling products. We're the other guys here, we're all wholesalers. We do understand the tax implications with cannabis in a regulated market, but maybe most people listening don't understand exactly why you have to take a product and charge twice the amount that you purchased it for.
Sure. So the regulatory, you know, environment for this stuff is just that alone is insane. You know, this everything costs a fortune. Like any service you would do in the normal business world, as you guys know, they hear the word marijuana and they start taxing you. You know, the person doing the service. Yeah. So like, so one, stuff's just more expensive in general. Two, you know, I don't think people quite get that, like the tax situation. This isn't like a regular business. You can't just get all the same write-offs and kind of like cost of doing business type things that you can with anything else really. So like, we don't get a lot of like cost savings on a lot of stuff. You know, we're getting nickel and dimed on everything. So like the true double up is like something we like really go for on some items. You can't possibly do it. Like we've never done that like on vape carts and stuff, because we just can't. I mean, we wouldn't sell any of them. We have to remain like somewhat competitive, you know. So I think it's picking a loss leader that you're comfortable taking that on the chin, just to have the availability to the customer. But like, yeah, I mean, our costs are insane, you know, and we're small, you know. We're like a 900 square foot, for lack of a better term, trap house, you know. Our expenses are pretty minimal compared to what they could be for a larger footprint and facility.
Yeah, hopefully 280E there that we hear so much about, the Safe Banking Act, gives them relief to the mom and pops like you guys.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, so reform on all of that would make things like a lot better, you know. Long term, I like the true double up can't. That's probably not long for this industry, you know. Like I think as the pricing and stuff goes down too, I don't know that we really have to do that. But I'm hoping that there's some regulatory change, and there's that part of it has to get better. It's for the customer, for the patient too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Hey Chris, I wanted to follow up on Tom's question here. You know, you talk about the true double up right now. I mean, is that enough with 280E? And I'll go in and describe what 280E is for those who don't know. Essentially, 280E is a tax law that says that if you're responsible for selling a federally illicit substance, you're not able to write off selling in general and administrative expenses. And so retailers such as yourself are hit hardest by that. As manufacturers like Tom, Kevin, and myself are, we're able to write off the cost of goods sold, but for you guys, it's not. And so, you know, I've talked to a couple of dispensary owners, and they were saying that even the true double up sometimes isn't enough on some of these products. I mean, do you think that a 50% markup is sufficient, or, you know, I don't know, where's your head at around that?
You know, I imagine for a lot of them, it's not, you know, because like, I was saying, you know, this facility was basically self-financed, self-funded. So we don't owe like any, like there's no Chad who's needing some money off this, you know. Like everything we make can go back into the business immediately, or back into, to the ownership or whatever. So like, our expenses are so low that like on a true double up, like, you know, we'd be doing pretty good. But like, I have to imagine people that have like $1 million facility that have, you know, 30 or 40, I mean, we have like 7 employees, you know what I mean? Like stores that have like 30 or 40 employees, stores that are also working on, you know, doing build out so they can be vertically integrated. Yeah, I can't imagine that the 50%, you know, or like the double up actually is going to do it all the time, you know. It ain't hurting stuff, but you know.
No, that makes sense. I mean, especially too, I think real estate plays a huge factor in this. If you own your own real estate, it's going to be a lot easier for you to pay your bills. If you're financing your real estate, or if you have leasehold improvements that where lease rates are increasing over time, I mean, that gets people into really sticky situations because, again, that affects 280E. In the pursuit of market share, I think people think that the profits will follow, but you have to be really careful, as I know that these three gentlemen that I'm, you know, fortunate enough to be able to stare at now, they all know it. That if you don't watch your bottom line, it's going to be really difficult for you to stay around at the end of the day. So I think that's kind of a word to the wise. And I know that there's, I guess in your neck of the woods, there's not as much competition. I assume that when Grand Rapids does go full tilt for adult use, I'm imagining it'll probably get a little bit more competitive. But even just in the sense of purchasing habits between the west side of the state and the east side of the state, it's a little bit different. And I think that you guys there in Grand Rapids have been a little bit more fortunate.
For sure.
Yep. Hey, Chris, one of your areas of expertise that many people aren't that familiar with, it's coming where more people are finding out about it, but we've talked about it, is these local ballot initiatives. You've collected signatures in your past career and put those together and knew all about them, but we put that in Prop 1 where we can, you know, force these communities to opt in, and we're starting to see them. Collin's got one. I think there's another one up in Utica, and there's other spots. What are you seeing on that end as far as a strategy to work that can work? But then also, I know you're out still kind of with your finger on the pulse of some locals. What are you seeing on the locals as far as this starting to more communities opting in? Is that going to happen anytime soon?
Yeah, so I think that we're kind of at an impasse, you know. Like, I think that all of the municipalities that were like super down for it basically already opted in. So like everyone from this point on has to be convinced, right? And so whether that happens by an operator going and talking to them, or pressure from the citizenry, or a ballot initiative, those are the only three options. So I think that because like we just talked about, the real estate for this stuff is insane, right? You know, like in the Grand Rapids process, people were buying million-dollar properties with no contingencies and stuff whenever all of this was going on. I mean, it got nuts, you know? So I think what operators are looking for are other opportunities to do this, right? And so if somebody's not going to play ball, the only real option that you might have is to do a local initiative. And so we have the ability in Michigan, it's called the Zoning Enabling Act. So the Zoning Enabling Act is inside the Constitution. It talks about things that you can and can't do with the ballot process. And so that's what actually makes these local things really hard. You basically create a system that gives the municipality still a lot of power. And then on the flip side of that too, it's what we've seen in Michigan, because I've done a couple of them opt-in campaigns, is that just because a municipality voted, even it could even be overwhelmingly voted for proposal one, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to vote for a standalone opt-in petition. Those things still take an incredible amount of time and money, very real community buy-in, you know. And so a lot of people are kind of running the California model. You know, this is really how all facilities are basically created in California. All of the easy stuff, that's all gone. You know what I'm saying? That's already been regulated. And so you go and you open up a township like next to Los Angeles or something, and you get signatures, you push it on the ballot, and that's how it's done. But like our voting base isn't quite the same here, you know, and things are a lot different. So I think that there's very few of them that have been successful here in Michigan. I think like Sam Haranick had one. There's a couple other ones that went. Yep. But it's been pretty tough. And honestly, you know, there's one in the one in Utica that you were mentioning. So now we're getting into a situation where we've got, you know, everything else that's ever happened electorally with marijuana. Like all the marijuana people have been like on one team. And now we're starting to get into situations where it's marijuana on marijuana, you know, or it's like one can, like, so in Utica, that deal is there's two licenses there. the two operators that have the licenses, they're cool with it. Somebody else wanted to open up a third one, and that's what the opt-in campaign is about. It's to opt in for an additional spot. You know, they've already opted in for the two. So you have operators against operators, which, you know, that's kind of that's going to happen in business. But so it's starting to get a lot more nuanced, I guess, you know, and I think it's a hard option. You know, it's definitely, it's one of the more difficult ways to do this, but I do believe that there are municipalities that, just because of the way voting trends work, they're going to have leadership that is always going to be disconnected from their constituents, right? That are never really going to be responsive to, even if a majority of the people who live there want adult use access and stuff like that, they're never going to go for it. And I think in those communities, the ballot initiative is the only option. And I think just as a tool of democracy, like it should be used, because you can't, if the lawmakers know that they can just ignore something and it'll go away, like, even if they're wrong, like if their constituency does want it and they don't get challenged on it, then once they do it to marijuana, they'll do it to anything else, you know?
Hey, Chris, it's Kevin over here at True Cannabis. You know, when I've dealt with some municipalities, they you know, they gave me some of the, you know, we'll wait and see. We want to kick the can a little bit, see what happens in the industry. What is it that you're hearing that they want to see? What is it that would potentially sway a community for it or against it, you know, by what is it that they're trying to look for? Do you know?
So they all seem to be really caught up on like the law enforcement part, right? Like they think that they need to have like a very robust, like law enforcement presence to go out and regulate this stuff. So it's always like super mind opening for them when you're like, hey, it's actually Laura, state police will come and you know, they'll handle this. So I think the perception of like, hey, I'm going to have to pay for something to regulate this, I think is really big. And then another thing, and this seems comical right now because we're talking about like $5,200 like AU pricing on pounds, but they're skeptical of the tax, like of like what they can get on the tax. I think that the excise tax is one of the more like it's definitely like an in the weeds type thing. So I don't think that the municipal leaders are getting the best information on it. I don't think they really understand how it works. I don't think that, you know, if you're like if you're some small township and you don't know how it works, you just think, yeah, I'm going to have the smallest dispensary in Michigan. You know, who cares, right? I'm not going to, like, how much money is that one going to make? And I don't think they understand that their number, the money a municipality gets for the excise tax is based on the amount of provisioning centers they have compared to every, you know, like as a total of all provisioning centers. So like you could have like the worst two dispensaries in the world, and Mount Pleasant could have the most banging dispensaries, two most banging dispensaries in the world. And at the end of the year, the excise check is the same for both municipalities. So I think that that's probably the biggest one is they don't understand how the excise tax works. They think that they need to have a lot of law enforcement out there to I guess like handle that. And then they also seem to have like a really weird, weird view of how dangerous of a type of use this is. And like they just have like a lot of like just a lot of like a lot of stuff about like open consumption and stuff like that seems to be like which is all stuff that, you know, basically that's day one Lara stuff. It's all regulated out, like all the behaviors and like the risk they're talking about is for the most part mitigated by just the state license system.
Yeah, I always thought it was funny when they would be like, you know, we don't want marijuana in our town. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, like as if it's not over there in the Walmart parking lot right now. I can tell you right now, there's caregivers up there selling weed. So let's bring it inside. Let's get it regulated. Let's put it under cameras. Let's make it a safe environment for people. Like the thought that this is just not here, I mean, that is just blinders on full bore, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Kevin, you're right. It is facts versus fears in a lot of cases there. Chris, you had some really interesting thoughts about the whole opt-in initiatives and where things are at right now. I kind of wanted to circle back on that because I know Grand Rapids just kind of flipped the switch on adult use sales. We just saw this week that Detroit was opening up a recreational ordinance as well. Where do you see that kind of heading now? I know that a lot of municipalities may not be opting in, but we got two big ones on the ballot right now, or that are coming down the pipeline. How do you see that affecting prices right now statewide?
Well, I mean, Detroit's gonna like it. My understanding is the way the Detroit ordinances are lining up, that, you know, a lot of these folks that are operating med dispensaries there would qualify as like a Detroit resident, so they'd be able to fast track themselves into, I think, like a February operation date for AU. And I just think with the rate that the AU retail facilities have been opening up, just without Detroit, just on their own, that's already putting a lot of pressure on the market. So I think if you see Detroit start to really start opening up, and the same with Grand Rapids, you know, we have one adult use facility here. We'll be up in December. Everyone else should be shortly behind us. You know, that's going to be a lot for the market to deal with. I think we're probably a year and maybe 2 years of prices just, you know, being pretty nuts. You know, I think that, like, I thought we were at a high point a while ago, but if Detroit is really, I mean, if they even bring on like a quarter of their stores, that really pumps up the AU retail outlets in the state by like a lot, you know? And so then we're looking at 21 here in Grand Rapids. We're looking at like 50, 60 in Detroit. I think, unfortunately for the consumer, we're going to look at pretty high price point for nice flowers and nice concentrate. And I think we're looking at, unfortunately, a lot of stores will be relying on like the larger operators, people that are pumping out just hundreds of thousands of square feet of mids, you know? And so I think that's probably going to be what's widely available. It's going to be a gnarly couple of years, I think.
I would like to say, and it's really interesting, as I found out today, there are some stores that are just like, hey, hold off for a couple of weeks, and on a couple of things. I sold product last week, was able to get through it. It definitely wasn't as easy as normal. So I did hear that. So now people that are counting on some cash flow and money, I've just heard of some pretty good discounts on the rec side. But as you just said, Chris and Sam and everyone else, we're talking about it. Detroit goes rec. Grand Rapids is going rec. And then, you know, once this Croptober runs its way through and this caregiver med supply stuff's through, I think there's going to be another shoot up, and we're not going to see that go down for a while. So pretty interesting. It'll also be interesting to see some of the distillate carts that hit the market here coming up based on all the rec outdoor and medical outdoor that did get grown this year in the system. So I've been hearing about some of the brands that are supplied up that way, but is that enough to bring down the price down for the consumer? I don't know. So one thing I mentioned, you got Highway 710 in your store. That's a legacy market. We were talking to about our friends over at NLG and different brands that we love and their products. What have you done on that? Who do you have in there? And then how does that relate? What kind of attention does that get you when you do have those products from the consumer?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the biggest thing on having caregiver products in the store is it allows me to go after a demographic of consumer that I know they're on the level already because they were driving to Lansing 10 years ago or 5 years ago and they were buying all this stuff, right? So that's a big part of it. It's actually crazy. A lot of our customer base are former Kind patients and stuff. So it's nuts because we're also a small greenhouse here as well. I really like that. It gives me something unique. There's some products that I absolutely have to carry, right? Like I can't not carry platinum vapes. You know, I would get murdered by one of these patients, you know? So that's something that I have to do. But on a lot of the other stuff, I have to have stuff that gives people a reason to come here, because as we kind of talked about with the Double Up, you know, like our biggest competitor here in town, they have 20 locations statewide. And when everything's said and done, they're probably going to have 5 or 6 here. So I have to imagine, and I hope, that on stuff that they buy, they're not paying the same as me. They're getting it significantly cheaper. I can't compete on stuff like that. But what I can compete on, other than customer service and just being cool dudes and stuff, is my ability to go out and get caregiver stuff and things that are unique to the store. So I think it just gives us a slight edge in getting getting good customers, good patients, patients that have been on the rolls for a long time. I think it's also a really good way to just kind of support that kind of, I mean, when we were all out here like trying to legalize this stuff, like we were doing it so that we could have like jobs for everybody, right? So that people could do what they were doing mm-hmm. and what they really were passionate about and loved and have like a real clean income coming in for it, so they can go and like buy a house and buy a car and send their kids to school and stuff, you know? So I really just like to support that. And I'm glad that there's, we're starting to see more of these folks figure out how to get into the legal, like the metric, you know, the metric product system. And I think that's awesome, you know?
Yeah, especially, I mean, like, we're all excited for Light Sky Farms to come back yeah. and different things like that. Of course, you know, the guys on here, they all transitioned their caregiver brands over and somewhat and we're already well known in different towns. So, you know, that's what we love. But
yeah, Chris, I love the strategy for when Ryan told me about your guys' shop about, you know, just carrying these legacy brands and focusing on quality. It's this strategy is staring right at you. You know, ignore the noise, you know, focus on your core competency, and that's quality. Ryan, I heard you had mentioned NLG. I saw that you made mm-hmm. a post on Instagram about some good yeah. things to come. Do you mind sharing what's going on with NLG and Redemption?
Well, it's just preliminary, but I go way back with the owner of NLG early on from Capital City Caregivers, and even some personal stuff, and just always been a fan. And you know, he's gotten kind of maybe you know, he's talked to other people out there, and you know, there's a lot of BSers and sharks out there, and that these guys that are coming in have to be careful to guard that. And he's gone through that and reached out to me, and we just talked. The idea is to, you know, get NLG on the market. It's North Lansing Growers. It's well known for solventless. He's got his genetics at work, and we're trying to get him set up in Lansing. And you know, it's a good story. Kenny's been through a lot, and is doing great. And you know, we've kind of had some moments together over the years. So that's you know, excited. I'm ready for, I know we all are ready for the solventless to start hitting the market hard again.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what comes of that, man. So yeah, good luck with that.
Thank you. That's, you know, appreciate all this, Chris, and always love talking about the market, municipalities, and it's something we talk about, you know, regardless. Used to do a lot of 6 a.m. calls because I think me, you, and Jamie Lowell were the only ones I knew that were up at 6 a.m. So every morning. But with that, you know, we got to get rolling here. It was a great show and fun to do our first live stream. And, you know, hopefully everyone wants to still come and listen to us after they see what we look like. But with that, I want to give some parting words of wisdom from our co-host and Chris, and then we'll wrap it up. So, Tom, shoot away.
Hey, Chris, it's just good to see you, man. I'm really looking forward to the rec opening out down at the farmhouse in Grand Rapids. We've got some special things tucked away for you. So looking forward to talking to you soon, brother. Good to see you, man.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Kevin.
Yeah, Chris, I just wanted to thank you for all your advocacy over the years. You've done a really good job. You've also helped me, unbeknownst to probably you, through Ryan, on keeping a pulse on the market. I feel like maybe you should have your own TV show on like MSNBC or something, the weed market and where it's going. But no, you've done a great job. We appreciate your hard work. I've worked with you in the past. You're a great guy to work with, and I look forward to working with you in the future. So good luck with everything out there in Grand Rapids, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Sam.
Chris, this is the first time I've been able to meet you face to face. I mean, albeit virtually. So, you know, it's been a pleasure meeting you, getting acquainted, and I'm sure I'll see you down the road. All right.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Chris, anything you want to say to the listeners before we roll?
No, just keep buying weed, you know. I think it's definitely a super wild trip, and I'm just like super happy to even be a part of it in the legal market. I think this industry is absolutely phenomenal in its ability to kind of lift us into having like a sustainable future and job and stuff, and I'm just super stoked to be even just a little part of it.
I thank you. It's a good story, and I remember as we wrap up here, a lot of people listening are new to cannabis or are from other states, and you got to take that leap, and you got to have the guts to do it, and be ready to stumble and take your lessons. And I was there since 15, watching some ups and downs, and some good starts and some bad starts, and all that. It's nice to see all of us with some momentum and people finding their place. So. In the industry that we, helped create. So with that, thanks everybody, and we'll be back next week.
The Smoke and Rope Podcast is produced and hosted by me, Ryan Basor, the owner of Redemption Cannabis. Have ideas for episode topics or would like to be a guest on the show? Contact us at ryanb@redemptioncanna.com. Thanks for being along for the journey.